Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is October 24th, 2013. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, it's only a few days away. We're having lunch with Catherine, with subscribers in San Francisco on October 29th. That's next Tuesday. I'll be speaking at the annual Fall Conference for the Real Estate and Appraisal Symposium. We'll be talking about what's next, primary trends in the global financial markets, and the impact on the San Francisco Bay Area real estate. Our theme tonight is the cost of capital. All across the markets, all across the news, what you're watching is the heating up of geopolitical economic warfare as global growth slows down. Interesting little article up on the blog. Let me read to you. The headline is Treasuries Lose Cachet on Lowest Federal Demand Since 01. What it says is America's borrowing costs are on the cusp of exceeding the rest of the world in the first time since 2010 after a political stalemate over public funding. And it goes on to describe the U.S. cost of capital as coming even with the rest of the world with sovereign debt at 1.57%. Yes, the dollar's been coming down. I think it's a temporary situation we have all around the world. Everybody's trying to drive their currency down to attract a lot more business and demand for exports or demand for their goods and services so they can export. But the dollar, as far as I'm concerned, is still very much in the channel. But we did see the dollar fall down at the end of the budget stalemate over the last week. We've seen yields drop a little bit with the dollar. We've seen North American equities continue their march up after the correction during the government shutdown, emerging market equities rising with them, and gold and silver rising. We even have several commentators saying that the bottom is in. I think it's too early to tell, but certainly they put in a couple strong days. We had an employment report come out disappointing in terms of the lack of job creation, again, a sign of global slowdown. John Williams at Shadow Stats indicates that the government says the unemployment rate is 7.2%. Williams says the real unemployment rate is about 23.3%. Unemployment has become an even more important statistic than ever because we now have the Fed determining, they say their policies of whether to taper or not based on whether employment is strong. And this certainly doesn't put us in taper zone. So that may have had something to do with the strong performance by gold and silver and the weakness in the dollar. Speaking of support for the equity markets, we see the SEC vote 5-0 on a preliminary crowdfunding rule. And that's going to be interesting. We have a 90-day comment period. Many of the people interested in using crowdfunders saying it's too complicated, it's too tough, it's going to not be anywhere near as attractive as Reg D or some of the other exemption pathways. Again, we have a special Soleri report. We now have links on crowdfunding up on the left on our blog. So I would encourage you to take a look at it if you're an entrepreneur interested in raising capital. There are, crowdfunding will be the sixth exempted pathway. And again, this one, crowdfunding still may not be right for you. But again, a 90-day comment period. So essentially at the beginning of January, we expect to know what the final policy will be. We converted our transcript on the Soleri report we did on a crowdfunding to a new revised report based on that material, and we'll be publishing that next week. So keep an eye out for that if you haven't listened to that one or read the transcript. It's all about what crowdfunding means to you, and even if you're not an investor or an entrepreneur interested in crowdfunding, I think it has the potential to have a real effect on everyone. So you might want to take a look at that. Immigration reform. We see the president saying he's going to move forward with immigration reform before the end of the year. The political pundits say not a good chance of getting it this year. One of the reasons it dovetails with crowdfunding is there is going to be a real push to grandfather anyone getting a degree or graduate degree in the United States to be given an automatic pathway to residency or to citizenship. We attract an enormous amount of incredible talent from all around the world, and then we proceed to send them home. So if that changes, then we're going to see a lot of the crowdfunding money start to finance a flow of young entrepreneurs from all over the world. And I think that policy is very much designed to dovetail. So keep an eye on immigration reform, because that in combination with the changes in the flow of equity capital could have an impact, a dramatic impact over the next 5 to 10 years. The NSA spying story just won't quit, even though Glenn Greenwald is now gotten bought away to his dream independent journalist platform. I have no idea what the impetus is behind that, but oftentimes when you want to get rid of a story that's really torturing you, the thing you do is you buy the person into the dream that they've always had. I'll never forget when one reporter called me many, many years ago when I was embroiled in litigation with the federal government, and they said, you know, I've decided I'm really going to sit down and tell your story. It's going to take a long time to write, but I've decided to do it. Please ship me all the documents. So I shipped her several boxes of legal documents, and then next week after she had received the documents, she called me back and she said, it's the most amazing thing. I just got an offer from New York to finance a company that I tried to finance last year and had no takers. And just out of the blue, somebody called up and financed the company. So I'm sending all the boxes back and I'm not going to write your story. And I thought, oh, well, here we go again. Anyway, so the idea that Greenwald got that proposal, I find to be very interesting. But the NSA spying story keeps going on. We have Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, calling the American ambassador, calling the American president, and then calling the American ambassador to heel, as she's been advised that the Americans are listening to her phone conversations. That's going to be tough on the dollar. I had Greg Hunter doing USA Watchdog tomorrow send me an article about the Saudis threatening to break relations, diplomatic relations with the U.S. They've turned down the seat on the Security Council at the UN. And he's saying, oh, this is tough on the dollar, dangerous on the dollar. No, what's dangerous on the dollar is if all the countries in the BRIC nations come up with ways of cycling the internet cables and protecting their phone conversations and emails with encryption. And in the great game of economic warfare, we don't get the intelligence we need to absolutely have the lowest cost of capital in the game. So NSA spying, very uncomfortable for the U.S. position and the market share for the Anglo-American alliance. We have the ECB coming out yesterday saying that they're going to start doing tougher bank tests. And we see the European bank shares dropping. You kind of wonder how tough they really want to be. Again, the last thing those countries want to really do is significantly raise their cost of capital. But it's tough on banks week. The Department of Justice is proceeding to claw back major negotiations and agreements with a series of different banks that they've been targeting. JP Morgan Chase, of course, with the largest settlement, but also Bank of America, Citibank, everybody's in the headlines. A little bit of what you're watching is the Sheriff of Nottingham clawing back their share. If you look at those big, or the big New York Fed banks, they're very much tied at the hip with the federal government acting as their depository. The government depends on them to raise capital and issue the debt. So you're talking about a very, a squabble within the family. And with the budget cuts upon us and the pressure on the U.S. government, the banks have enjoyed and channeled enormous amounts of largesse during the financial coup d'etat. And I dare say the federal bureaucracies want a piece back. You always would see tremendous tension at times like this between the companies who basically have equity valuations and profits driven by government subsidy, government contracts. They were referred to as proprietaries. And literally the shareholders thought they owned the company. The management thought they ran the company. But the folks in the bureaucracy and the federal government, both overt and covert, really thought of those companies and the value created as theirs. So you see that kind of tension. And but don't for a minute think that that this means a real parting of the ways, because the big banks have enormous operational responsibilities in terms of the U.S. government. And in that sense, there is no real sovereignty by the government from them. They control their bank accounts. pension reform, more and more stories. Check some of them out on the blog. A very important trial balloon I had. Our blogmaster put it up in a commentary. Alice Manel, a very respected academician with many posts in a variety of institutions related to the financial system and retirement system, floating a new trial balloon, proposing that we move the retirement age on Social Security up to 70. Expect to see that proposed more and more. It's all part of the debasement and the slow burn is moving retirement age out. However, if you look at the unemployment statistics and what is happening with robotics, automation, other things, we're also seeing, you know, the big question is where are they going to get the jobs? Where are these jobs going to come from? So there's a real dance around making, as I said, and as I keep saying, this number of making the legacy systems assets reconciled to the liabilities now that the money's been shifted out on the financial coup d'etat. I put a commentary up on the blog about the politics of sex and race. I was on a wonderful radio show this weekend talking about Obamacare and was shocked to discover that the commentator really did believe that the House Republicans' problem with Obamacare had to do with the president's racial background. I was a little bit shocked, and so I wanted to make a comment about it. It's very important not to fall prey to the divide-and-conquer politics. I know I beat this drum a lot on the Sillery Report, but it's extremely important that we not fall into that. You might want to check out that commentary. Wonderful, wonderful sort of comment from our team on the roundup today. Darlene Heckman, who runs our customer service, said, you know, please remind everybody they don't have to give personal information on the websites when they when you shop around. And there are lots of opportunities to shop around and do it without giving personal information. In fact, if you look at the latest headlines on the all the issues of using a variety, both the government's and private websites on these issues, you want to be very, very careful about your personal information. I mean, I will just tell you, as a former government official who worked a lot with databases and data operations in government, you should assume that no data that you ever, ever give to the government is secure. It's just absolutely not secure. We are beginning to slowly see, you can tell from the comments coming into the blog from Sillery Report subscribers, we're beginning to see a real dawning of people's realization of how uncomfortable and expensive Obamacare is going to be. The one thing I don't think they realize is the extent to which people are going to sign up for insurance, pay their money into the system and think they're covered, and then show up and be run around in all sorts of games about why you're disqualified for this or why they can't do this or whatever. And at this point, you know, I just assume as a practical matter that the whole thing's going to be fraudulent. That's not to say it's not going to work for certain people. There's always exceptions to the rule. But at this point, I would say I'd fundamentally lost faith in the system. Our hero this week is programmer and entrepreneur Patrick McConlogue from New York, who passed a homeless man every day on his way to work and gave him a choice between $100 or a free computer programming lessons, a laptop with solar, this powered with a rechargeable solar source. It's a 23-year-old young man who apparently blogs and has probably made great hay out of this. But the homeless man, Leo, the homeless man chose the free computer programming lessons, and so apparently they're proceeding, and they claim the homeless man has built his first app. And it's just a cute little reminder that we all, if we all just do what we can do, it's amazing what can happen. Ask Catherine some really good questions this week. One person wrote and asked about Karen, I think it's pronounced, it's H-U-D-E-S, Karen Hudes, I think, who is a World Bank whistleblower. I've been asked several times about her before, and each time have said I've looked at her information and don't think her information is that useful. First of all, if you look at when she became a whistleblower, you almost wonder what she was doing for the prior 10 to 15 years and didn't notice there was a problem. If you look at much of what she talks about and or recommends, I think there's much better information about what the World Bank has been up to. And so I haven't seen a need to sort of post much of her stuff. We finally had somebody also post this week on the blog. Let me just read the comment. A few months ago, one of your subscribers asked about Karen Hootie's. Gary Null had her on the Progressive Commentary Hour this week. I think your assessment of her was correct because her information was rather pathetic and she really didn't tell anything typical of your limited hangout. It was an unpleasant interview. Even Gary was frustrated and I think cut her off early since she only repeated herself about how much she was doing as a whistleblower. Good call. So I'm amazed at how often I get asked this question. But I want you to be really, really careful. Whistleblowers, you know, sometimes people will say that I was a whistleblower. That's not the case. I was the target of a whistleblower. So you want to be really careful because just because somebody's a whistleblower does not mean that they are sincere or authentic, or even if they are, and as for all we know this person is, doesn't mean their information is useful for you. So I would just be very careful. Dear Catherine, what happened to all the riots and protests that we saw in Europe and in all the U.S. over the tough economic conditions? Have things really improved that much such that people don't feel the need to protest anymore? Or is something else going on? Good question. I'm going to send that over to some of my contacts in Europe and see what they say. Would you please ask Catherine to comment on this? And the subscriber had sent a link to an interview with Lord Blackheath in London or in England, talking about Foundation X. And he's got several presentations in YouTube, including in the House of Lords, about Foundation X. And here's... And I've run into quote-unquote Foundation X many times over the last 10 years. What happens is somebody comes to you and they say, oh, I represent, or I've been contacted by someone who represents a foundation and they have billions of dollars and they want to now spend it to save the world. And if you will just do this thing and that thing and this thing, and the next thing you know, you know, people are spending their lives running around trying to get ready for the trillions of dollars from Foundation X that never shows up. And, you know, my attitude is every time I'm approached with this, I just roll my eyes and say, well, when you're ready to write a check, call me. And I can't tell you how much money and time I save. It's the same thing with various currency scams like the dinar. And, you know, there's nothing more real than somebody who's willing to take the time or write the check. And so when somebody shows up and says, you know, we want to spend $100 billion to save the world, I say, fine, you know, just write a check for $10,000 and that will provide the time for this person or that person or this thing to talk about it. And, you know, somebody who's got $100 billion, if they won't write a check for $10,000, then don't take them seriously. Anyway, so I don't take Foundation X seriously. Period. Our interview is on the emerging markets with Chuck Gibson. I put the chart up on the blog post. You can see there's been an absolutely remarkable divergence in valuations in the emerging markets and the North American equities this year. So this gets back to what I talked about, the cost of capital and the nature of economic warfare when the U.S. companies are trading at PEs of 24 and 25, and the emerging markets are trading at PEs of 13. That means our companies can go into their markets and buy up market share or buy up companies or buy up talent very, very cheaply. It's a tremendous advantage, and I suspect it's one of the reasons we see G7 targeting the tax havens. They want to see that capital drive their PEs up as opposed to invest in a variety of other things. So Chuck and I talk about what, you know, how exactly that's happened and what it means, both short-term and long-term. Is this an opportunity or something to be concerned about? I think because the developed world is worrying about re-engineering their debt and retirement liabilities, there's going to be tremendous pressure during 2014, 2015. And so with global growth slowing, it may not be that the emerging market stocks for the next couple years reflect their valuations or reflect the valuations that their underlying growth might normally, or you would expect with that kind of underlying growth. But Chuck, as usual, had some great charts, and it's a wonderful framework and overview for the issues at hand. And let's go to the movies. Our movie is Stock Shock. It's the story of the SiriusXM radio and all the shenanigans around the early years of that company. It's fascinating, and it's a reminder of how many things can go wrong. And it begins to lead you into the story of naked short selling, which is one of the problems that beguile smaller companies in a market which is, in my opinion, not properly regulated. Patrick Byrne, the CEO of Overstock, did great work and put up a website on naked short selling. Naked short selling is one of the problems that has tormented mining stocks, and one of the reasons it makes mining stocks, particularly the junior mining stocks, so tricky. But it's a great and sort of chilling tale of reminding you all the things that can go wrong, particularly in the life of a young company. And because of what's starting to happen with more and more companies, startups happening around new technology, and because what crowdfunding may do, I keep trying to warn everybody about all the things that can go wrong with an investment. And Stock Shock is a pretty interesting little documentary. I recommend it to you. Okay, well, that's it for today. I don't do a salary report in the last week of the month, but yes, I'm going to do one because it's Halloween, and I'm finally going to come up with my zombie report. Those of you who have been subscribers know for several years now, I've been trying to figure out what in the world is this zombie thing about, and we have a couple of people on our team who are keen followers of the zombie phenomenon, keep putting me on to the best movies and the best cartoons and the best everything in zombie. We've published several sort of reports on the blog. So finally for Halloween, the Solari Zombie Report. And then the following week, it's our Coming Clean selection. Joseph Farrell, who's now going to be doing a quarterly report with me, will be joining me. We're going to be talking about his two new books and how the reinvestments of the breakaway civilization relate to what's happening in the economy and what that could mean to the economy and the markets going forward. And then, very interesting, given that gold may be turning up, we'll see. November 14th, I'll be joined by Franklin Sanders' Precious Metals Market Report. We look forward to that. So until Halloween with the Zombie Report, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.